I know I've been part of a group conversation where all of a sudden I realized I had no idea what was going on. That can happen because a speaker can talk only so fast, about 100 words or so a minute, and still remain coherent. Most of us, on the other hand, are perfectly capable of listening to 400 or more words a minute, depending, of course, on the complexity of the subject and our backgrounds. So what happens? Too much time to think about what you're going to say when it's your turn, about the ball game tomorrow night, about the pay raise you think you're going to have to fight for, about the client you have to see. This is natural, but it's a roadblock to effective listening and conversation. And here's another one. Listen.
George. Hey, George. Did you finish the Butler report yet?
What?
The report. Did you finish it yet? I need it to set the budget.
What report?
Geez, will you listen? Where's the Butler report?
Did you ever try to hold a conversation in the wrong place? The phones are ringing, people are talking loudly, the boss drops in, a friend stops by. These situations happen at home and at the office, and they not only get in the way of effective conversation, they can cause friction either through misunderstanding or just frustration. You have to create an atmosphere that minimizes distractions. If you can't get someone to cover your phones during a conversation, go someplace else to talk. If your desk is in an open area, turn it so people can't catch your eye as they pass. Put a sign up that says, "Please don't interrupt until 2 o'clock. Thanks." It may not be easy, but it pays off in better communication and a better job. Another roadblock to effective listening and conversation is knowing, or at least thinking we know, what's going to be said.
Let me tell you, Jack, we're not going to get anything out of this meeting. I mean, the guy who's talking is a vendor, for Pete's sake. He's interested in only one thing, selling his product. I haven't met a salesman yet who gave you the whole story on anything. That shows you the kind of management we have. They bring in this guy to explain our needs.
Instead of trying to extract whatever information we can, we listen too selectively, biased, in fact. And that makes for very poor conversations because we're only trying to get across our own point of view instead of listening to what's being said around us. We prejudge the speaker without hearing the message. Here's another roadblock.
I had an experience yesterday that you wouldn't believe. I was walking on the sidewalk, you know, in front of that flower shop. Well,
that reminds me, Bill bought me the most beautiful roses this weekend. Wasn't that sweet?
Yeah, what a guy. Anyway, as I was walking, someone came out of the flower shop counting a wad of money.
Oh, you're not going to tell me that's the guy who walked into the telephone pole and the money went flying in all directions?
You're right. I'm not going to tell you anything.
There is nothing worse than a listener who interrupts continually. That's the most obvious way of saying to the speaker that I'm important and you are not. Still another roadblock is emotional listening.
He thinks I'm a little girl. He has to tell me how to do everything. Every time I hit him with a great idea, I get, "This is how we do it here." I don't get any respect, and I don't think management knows how to treat its employees.
If you were having a conversation with Peg when she let loose with this barrage, you'd have to fight the instinct not to continue the conversation like this.
I know what you mean, Peg. They're treating you like a fool. I wouldn't take that kind of guff from my boss.
You might be able to keep the conversation going with that kind of emotional reaction to Peg's emotional outburst, but you wouldn't be doing her any favors. Your goal should be to use questions to help her separate facts from emotions to help plan a course of action. A final roadblock we create as listeners is simply not being prepared to listen. As you may have learned from that pop quiz I threw at you earlier, where the manager gave instructions on how to conduct a workshop, you may need some work here. Before you start a conversation or listen to a talk or discussion, summarize to yourself whatever you may know about the speaker, the topic, or other listeners to help you focus on what's being said. To be an effective conversationalist, then, you need to be able to remove listener-created roadblocks. 1. Daydreaming. You have more time mentally than you need. 2. Selecting the wrong place to hold a conversation. Too many distractions to concentrate. 3, listening only to what you know and believe, tuning yourself out of any meaningful dialogue, prejudging. 4, interrupting. It's rude, insensitive, and it also can mean you're jumping to conclusions and prejudging. 5, emotional listening. You can't make effective judgments, recommendations, or conclusions if you let your emotions color your thinking. And 6, not being prepared to listen. Develop an attitude that makes you receptive to new ideas and suggestions. There are 2 sides to the conversational coin. You can set up roadblocks as a listener or as a speaker. For example, have you ever listened to someone who speaks like this? Did it put you to sleep? Well, unless you're really concentrating, you probably didn't get everything you should have from your discussion because you didn't want to work that hard to listen. We all know by now what happens when you don't listen. You miss the message, and you miss the chance to have the kind of conversation you want. Another speaker-created barrier is the use of jargon.
Jennifer tells me you're the fellow who designed that gorgeous catalog we just got in the mail. You must be very talented.
Oh, thanks. Quality lithography can make anything look good.
What's lithography?
Printing. The job ran on the Biddy Glaser half-web.
Oh, well, it is pretty. The pictures are so crisp.
That's because we opted for a 150 line screen and used a 70-pound chrome coat. That's why the whole job is saddle-stitched, by the way. I was afraid the weight of the paper couldn't hold a perfect bind.
Yes, I think Jennifer's calling me. Nice meeting you.
Technical people, meaning people within specific occupations, can be intimidating when they talk down, even without thinking, to non-technical people. That can be their way of saying, I'm more important than you are. Look how smart I am and how dumb you are. Or it could just be a habit formed by years and years of shop talk with their peers. One of the greatest problems we have in our high-tech companies is that management is often non-technical and can fail to grasp the significance of what their engineers or scientists are talking about. Jargon is okay only when it's used by people within a profession or discipline. Otherwise, any attempt at conversation is usually futile. The speaker can also throw out mixed messages.
Come in, Ron. Come in. Nice to see you. Say, great-looking tie. And you're fired.
Well, that's pretty obvious, but speakers can do that, can't they? Do you remember the husband who was watching the basketball game when his wife came in from grocery shopping? She said she didn't want help carrying in the bags, but her voice quality did not match the message. As a speaker, you have to be sure your body language, including the way you say something, even the way you look at someone, matches the message, or you may be misunderstood. Another speaker-created roadblock is a totally disorganized message. The person you're speaking with may jump from topic to topic, may go on too long, may not even give you a clue as to what he or she is talking about. This occurs quite a bit in meetings, and the end result is often inaction. As you'll discover on tape 2, this roadblock can be offset by the judicious use of questions. Don't allow the other party to think he or she got the message across to you when, in fact, you missed it completely. Speaker-created roadblocks, then, include 1, voice quality and delivery. A bad voice, particularly a droning one, can make someone tune out and, in extreme cases, fall asleep. 2, overuse of jargon. Save the shop talk for the people in your department or discipline. Show interest in getting people to understand what you're saying. 3, mixed messages. There's an old song, your lips tell me no, no, but there's yes, yes in your eyes. Don't confuse the issue for the listener. For example, a manager who corrects an employee with a big smile on his face may be interpreted as saying, this really isn't very important, when that's not the message that was intended. And 4, disorganized messages. Think about what you're saying. Let your listener in on the reason behind what you're saying. Otherwise, the result is confusion. This is the point in this course where some people may wonder, despite everything they've heard, why there's so much emphasis on listening in a course on conversation. After all, we want to talk and be heard. But that's not what conversation in its truest form is all about. I've said it before, and I'll say it a number of times before you've mastered all the conversational skills. Conversation is a two-way street, and your skills are measured in large part by how well you listen, absorb, and react to what you hear. According to Dr. Tony Alessandra, a top author and lecturer on relationships, in the workplace, we spend about 9% of our time writing, 16% reading, 30% speaking, and 45% listening. The problem is, with all that time devoted to listening, we don't do it well because we're not trained to do it well. Did you learn to listen in school? No, you were taught to read and write. Maybe a few of us had a year or so worth of instruction in speaking, but virtually none of us was taught how to listen. Those people who have either trained themselves to listen well or taken a course in it have reaped the benefits. Dale Carnegie, in his best-selling book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, described a party he attended. A woman who had heard he traveled extensively asked him to tell about the wonderful places he had visited and the sights he had seen. As they sat down on the sofa, she remarked that she and her husband had just returned from Africa. Mr. Carnegie responded how interesting he thought that was, and that he always wanted to see Africa, the closest he had come being a 24-hour stopover in Algiers. He asked the woman if she had visited big game country, and when she responded in the affirmative, he told her he envied her and asked if she would tell him about Africa. Mr. Carnegie said that the woman proceeded to speak for 45 minutes, never once stopping to ask what he had seen on his travels. All she really wanted was a good listener, so she could have the joy of talking about her once-in-a-lifetime trip. Do you think she told her friends that Dale Carnegie was a fabulous conversationalist? You bet. What Mr. Carnegie probably did was, one, give her his undivided attention. Two, make it a point to nod his head from time to time, raise his eyebrows at appropriate moments during her narrative, and make occasional sounds to indicate interest. And three, he might have also asked for more information from time to time, such as, I find that fascinating, and then what happened? One key to being a good conversationalist, then, is to demonstrate that you really are listening. The tilt of your head, the occasional question or interested sound that tells the speaker you were listening carefully, always gains you points. Now, let's reverse that. You're having a conversation with a group of people, and one of them has asked your position on the new product that's been proposed. As you enthusiastically explain why you're all for it, you notice that everyone is staring at you, but without any expression. Some have their arms folded across their chests. One is sprawled on his chair. Another has her head cupped in her hands. And still another is filing her nails while you're talking. Their body language, even if they're really paying attention, doesn't help you a bit. There's no sound, no acknowledgement of what you're saying. What's going through your mind?
I'm not connecting with them at all. They must think my idea is stupid. Why did I have to open my mouth?
One of the most important things we can do when we're on the listening side of a conversation is to let the speaker know we're there. A nod of the head, a smile, leaning forward to indicate interest, an occasional hmm, or I see, are all ways of saying, I'm with you. Let's keep talking. Another way of showing interest and making the conversation work is to ask questions. Now, don't get me wrong. Questions that are used poorly can stop conversations, just as properly timed and phrased questions can enhance conversations. Do you remember Jane's attempt at the quick start on tape one? We're going to come back to it soon, but if you recall, she injected the wrong question at the wrong time. Listen to this use of questions.
Hi, Joe. This must be the hottest day of the year, isn't it?
Yep.
What do you think the temperature is?
90-something.
Do you think this heat wave's going to stop anytime soon?
Nope.
What happened here? Joe may not be much of a conversationalist, or he simply may not have wanted to get into a conversation. Either way, the speaker didn't do much to draw him in. Now let's try it again, taking a totally different tack.
Hi, Joe. I heard you talking to Harry the other day about the greenhouse effect. How does that have an impact on this incredible heat wave?
I didn't know you were interested in anything technical.
When it's this hot for this long, I'd like to know what might be causing it. If you can spare a moment or two, I'd like to know why it's called the greenhouse effect and how it may be creating this blast furnace heat.
Have you ever been in a greenhouse? You know how hot, humid...
It's not too terribly difficult to start a conversation with anyone if you know what his or her hot buttons are, or if you're willing to find them. Everybody wants to talk about their own special interests. Good questions will make them comfortable about doing it. When you respond to a speaker, you're actually drawing him or her into a conversational circle. When you ask questions, you're really clarifying, commenting, and participating in an overall communication. You're giving something back. You're contributing. You're saying, I'm listening and I'm interested. Rudyard Kipling, the famed British author and journalist, had this to say about questions.
I had 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names were what and where and when and why and how and who.
Those are the 6 questions that control conversation. Actually, they go even deeper than that. If you can answer them about any topic, you know a good deal about that topic. And those 6 question words are the basis of any journalism course. Reporters must ask those questions to get at the real answers. There are actually 2 types of questions. Closed-end and open-end. Usually, closed-end questions fall into the who, what, when, and where categories.
Who chopped down the cherry tree?
George Washington.
Where can I find the Thompson file?
On Jane's desk.
When do you want to meet?
9 o'clock tomorrow.
What's your favorite sport?
Baseball.
These are all closed-end questions. They're used largely to get information, not to generate discussion. So don't be surprised if you don't get conversation when you use them. On the other hand, if you can construct a how or why question, you've made it difficult for your conversational partner not to give you a conversational answer.
How do you manage to get everything done on time?
Well, it isn't easy. First, I had to get Bob's approval on the proposal, which meant I had to track him down while he was traveling in California. Then,
with all that talent, why do you think the team can't win consistently?
I have a few theories. I think the biggest problem is that they don't have a good shooting guard, so the defense always collapses.
If the questions you ask appeal to the speaker's self-interest, you're almost sure to get feedback. Most people like to talk about themselves. If you encourage them to, you'll get conversation. Plus, how and why questions can't be answered yes or no, at least not easily.